All right, Rabosai, great to see you. Paul, Zadie, Toby, Alex, Arthur, Phyllis, and Erwin. Today is a very special day for us because, God willing, unless something crazy all of a sudden prevents us and there's an Ones, we should be completing the second Perek of Megillah. So we find ourselves actually all the way at the top of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, all the way up on 21a. And this should go by actually very smoothly because we're really just picking it up from what we were doing last time. To remind ourselves, last time we basically had a Mishnah that gave us not an exhaustive list, but a pretty well-stocked list of mitzvahs that are done during the day. And it told us that they can be done throughout the day. And then at the end, it told us about mitzvahs that are done at nighttime. So we pick up in the Gemara going through the list of mitzvos and figuring out how do we know that they are daytime mitzvos and cannot be performed during the night. So all the way at the top, Ula Rifa Sa'egla, the mitzvah of Egla Arufa. We might be familiar, maybe because we heard it in connection with the story of Yaakov and Yosef, but essentially someone dies. We don't know who, what, how, when, but we know that he's closer to city A as opposed to city B. The elders of city A, they come out, they do a whole ritual, they decapitate the calf, and basically they atone because presumably it was their city that did not care for the person and led to such a terrible circumstance. Anyway, how do we know this ritual is done during the daytime? Amri Devei Rabbi Yanai, Kaparik Sivba Kikachem. So it uses the term kapara, an atonement, and we know that the word kapara is also used in regards to general kachim, general sacrifices and services in the temple. So just like kachim, as we learned previously, are day-bound generally, so too, Egla Rufa is done during the day. Very good. Next, well, taharas mitzora. So we always learn about the mitzora, for lack of a better term, the leper, even though it's not leprosy. Okay, that's what we always have to say because we don't have a good translation. So the mitzora, eventually, once he's done with his quarantine, he wants to become purified. So when can that be done? Dixiv zostia toras mitzora by yom taraso, on the day that he becomes spiritually purified. Pretty explicit in the pasuk. It's the daytime. Moving on to the next one. Kol ha'layla kasher l'ksira sa'omer. We dealt with this a little bit more in depth last time. We talked about spira. Remember, we learned that Tosis toward the end, by the machlokas, if every night is on separate mitzvah, is it one big mitzvah? Or maybe, you know, there's different understandings of the Bahag. We learned that last time. So anyway, kol ha'kasher l'ksira sa'omer. So if you remember, the way the ritual works for the Omer, keep this in mind for Pesach, don't worry, we still got a while till then. So the way the ritual works is that they would, a matzah yontif rishon, they would go in and they would be kotzer, they would reap, they would cut off and gather the barley for the ritual. And then during the day, they actually bring the offering. So how do we know that it's during the daytime that they actually bring the offering? Damarmar, sira uspira balayla vaba bayom. So we know, our Mishnah tells us that counting of the Omer begins at night. It's done during the nighttime. And the cutting of the Omer, the reaping of the Omer is done at night. And then, and only then, during the daytime, do you actually bring the offering. It's an important principle that you need to do hachana. You need to have some form of preparation before performing the mitzvah. Very good.
Rabbi, isn't that very unreasonable to have a ksira during the night?
Yeah, well, Toby, are you concurring?
Yes, I'm totally concurring. I'm thinking, like, what if it's a cloudy night and there's no moon?
Yeah.
It's like, how would you even see?
Dangerous. It's dangerous.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, that's why we're all in the safety of our own home, right? Sorry, I couldn't resist. So you can light. I mean, presumably, like they lit torches, and you know they went out into the field, and you know they got enough for the offering. You know they didn't have to. Not every single farmer had to go out to their field and then bring in all their grain. This is just they went out to get enough for this offering. So you know, I think it was manageable for them. But I'm sure they would appreciate your concern. Okay. Zahaklal. Yes. No, sorry. Ulhekter Chalav Veivarim. So in terms of the burning of the different fats and limbs, how do we know that that could be done even after the evening begins? Desiv kol halayla ad haboker. Even though ideally it should be done during the daytime, just like the rest of the temple services. If need be, the pasuk gives a dispensation, and because it might take a while, that you can do it even during the nighttime. Now, final part of the Mishnah. If we remember, the Mishnah said, Zeh haklal, davar shemitzos bayom kasher kol yom. Any mitzvah that can be done during the day, the entire day is good enough. Any time during the day, it can be done. Now, the issue is, that's a superfluous statement, seemingly, because the Mishnah already gave us a list of these mitzvos that we taught were day-bound mitzvos. So why do I need this statement at the end of the Mishnah? Was it just to wrap everything nicely in a bow? Maybe, but that's not what the Gemara thinks. The Gemara thinks it's actually hinting to one other day-bound case. What is that? So a little bit of background. There's something called the Lechem Hapanim, which is many, you know, they call it the showbread, I think is how they refer to it. I mean, it's a funny name because I just imagine like the bread's putting on a show or something. So the showbread, the Lechem Hapanim. And the Lechem Hapanim, these loaves of bread, if you ever look at a model of the temple, of the Mishkan, you know, you'll see the loaves actually had very unique shapes to it. Very, you know, that is the bottom and then kind of curves up on the top, very unique shapes. And the way the Rabbanan, the normative way to understand what happened is once a week on Shabbos, they had to replace the breads. And what they would basically do is as they took off one bread, they would put another bread in. This is essentially like I wanted to heat up a pizza slice, two pizza slices. So I put one in the toaster oven. And as I pulled one out, I was like quickly slipping the other one off the plate in so I could put the other one on the other plate. And I was like, this is like what they did in the Beis HaMikdash. So essentially, as they were slipping off last week's bread, they were right behind it also slipping on the new bread for that week. So according to Rabbanan, there can't be even a single moment that the Shulchan, that it's empty, that there's no bread on there. So, however, this position in our Mishnah is not the sheet of the Chachamim. It's actually a little bit more of a lax sheet, a more lenient one. Desiv kol laila ad haboker. Zahaklal, darshu sasvayom kasher kol yom. Zahaklal, la'asuye mai. So what does this statement Zahaklal come to include? La'asuye sidur bazikin v'siluk bazikin. So not only was there bread, but apparently there were little spoonfuls of frankincense that went along with it. Rabbi Yossi, and this is basically supporting the position of Yossi, the Tanya. Right? Yossi Omer, Silek es hayishana shachris, v'siris hachadosha arvis. Rabbi Yossi was, he had a pretty flexible understanding of the halakha. Unlike the Rabbanan who said, there can't even be a single moment that there's no bread on the table there. He said, look, if you take off the bread in the morning, and then some time, you know, as it gets closer to evening, you put on more bread. Ein b'kach klum, you got nothing to worry about. As why? Umani b'kaim lifnei Hashem tamid. So why? What do I do with the pasuk which says it should always be before God? Seemingly that implies there shouldn't be a moment that there's no bread on the table. Shalehei shulchan below lecha. So actually, do you guys have the word yehei over there? I'm curious. What's your girsa? Do you have shalo yehei or do you have shalo yalin? What's it saying?
I have yehei.
Okay, very good. So my Gemara also has the word yehei. You look in Rashi and you look in, you won't have this in the art scroll necessarily, but the Gilyon quoted in Hagos Tziyunim points out that actually the word shalo yalin shulchan below lechem, that the table shall not literally sleep without any bread on it, meaning a night, it shouldn't go till nighttime without bread. So long as there's bread at some point put back on it during the day, then that is okay. And that's what the Mishnah means to say when the Mishnah says that a mitzvah, zeklav, davar shemitzvah sabiyom kasher kol yom, as long as you get in at some point during the day, you've still fulfilled the mitzvah. That's the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. By the way, this just the language of Lina, this comes up in a few areas of Halacha. There's something called Maim Shalanu. Anyone know what Maim Shalanu is? So it sounds like it means what?
My water.
Our water, right? So actually, that's what everyone thinks the first time they see it in Hilchos Pesach. So Maim Shalanu is actually the water that you use for baking matzah. And actually, you're supposed to let it sleep, you know, like this is anthropomorphic, but let it sleep overnight, because if you take the water out during the day, the water might be warm, and that would accelerate the cooking, the fermenting cooking process. So mm-hmm. what they would do is they would actually take water out, let it cool off overnight, and then use it in the morning for baking matzahs. So that's called Maim Shalanu, water that slept overnight.
Moshe, yes, I'd like to suggest an explanation for the term concerning the bread, the show bread. It's they have several loaves, and they're on a rack. That conceptually, it's similar to a wine rack. And it's there on display. It's there to be seen.
Yeah.
So it's shown.
Yeah. No, I just get a kick out of it. That's all. That's I agree. Yes, it is on display. That is definitely true. So and one other just area of halakha off the top of my head where the idea of you see that term used of lina is halanas hames. So I know I see we have I think a few members of our Chevra Kadisha who are with us. So we are, and anyone who's experienced loss might be acutely aware that there's a principle in halacha that provided family is already around and everything is logistically taken care of, we try to do the burial as soon as possible, because there's something called halanas hames, which is letting the deceased just remain overnight without anything being done. Many times that's necessitated, but essentially there's the Isser of Halanas Hames is that due to the dignity of the deceased, we try to bury them as soon as possible. So again, now with that understanding, you can understand why the language here is Shelo Yalin. Don't let that bread go an entire day and then into the night without being replaced. Okay, so just bringing in a few areas of Halacha. Final part, and get ready, guys. We're about to finish the second parak, God willing. So again, same idea here. Why did the Mishnah need to give this very vague statement? Anything that's a mitzvah at nighttime, you can perform it the entire nighttime. Again, this is not just simply a nice statement to collect everything together at the end of the Mishnah. It's not a conclusion, but it's actually, again, hinting at a particular halacha. So what is this halacha? La suye mai. So, okay, we talked about this a little bit last week. When do I have until to eat the afikomen, right? What's afikomen represent, according to most opinions? It represents, very good, guys. Represents the Karban Pesach, the Paschal offering. That's what we do nowadays. And then what is the time limit? When do I have to finish eating the Karban Pesach by?
Halfway. What's the term for half, not midnight, but halfway?
Very good. Halachic midnight. So the question is, why midnight? So there's a fundamentalist, sounds funny, I'm not talking about terrorism, but there's a fundamentalist approach to it. And then there's the extrinsic approach. So one is to say that actually that is the genuine deadline, is midnight. We're about to prove that we don't paskin that way. What we actually paskin is like the Rabbanan, who say, actually, you can do it all the way until Alos HaShachar, all the way until morning. But as a geder, in order to protect us, lest we go all the way until the morning and we're just so into the Haggadah that we don't get up to eating the Karban Pesach, they wanted to set a security policy, finish eating by midnight. But really, in principle, in the Ikar Adin, you have the entire night to eat the Karban Pesach. And that's what this halacha actually is hinting at, that really, in principle, if you have to eat the Karban Pesach at night, really, You can use the entire night. You could wait all the way until the end of the night to eat the Korban Pesach. Came along the Rabbanon. They set a fence around the Torah, but in principle, you can do it. And that's what the Gemara is going to tell us. This last statement is coming to teach me the laws of eating the Korban Pesachim. And this is specifically to repudiate the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. The Tanya, v'achlu esa basar b'layla hazeh. Om Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Remember this? Nemar kan b'layla hazeh. V'nemar halav v'avarti b'eretz Mitzrayim b'layla hazeh. Mal halan achatzos afkan achatzos. So he says, the language, we see that there is a similarity. There's a similarity between nighttime in terms of eating the Karim Pesach and nighttime. I believe that's referring to the Max Bechoros of the firstborn, which also mentions chatzos. So I think just like over there, there's a certain time marker at chatzos at about midnight. So too, I only have until midnight, Me'ikar Hadin, to finish eating the Karim Pesach. Kamash Milan comes the mission and teaches me the principle that Davar Shemitzvah B'Layla, Kasher Kol Layla, since this is a nightbound mitzvah to eat the Karim Pesach, in principle, I have the entire night to eat the Karban Pesach. Hadron olacha kori lemafreya. And yasher koach, everyone, mazel tov. We have just completed the second perek of Megillah, and we are well over halfway through the Masechta. We've already been halfway through, but now we're well over halfway through and making good progress, Baruch Hashem. Any questions before we go on?
I have a question.
Yes, Paul.
So for the mitzvot that you can do all night, when does the night end? Alota Shachar or otherwise?
Very good. So this brings us back to our discussion on top of Chaf and Mabez on 20b, but essentially, yes, until Alos HaShachar. Because in principle, Alos HaShachar is really the beginning of the morning. But again, as a siyug, as a geder, the Rabbanon, as a precaution, said, when it comes to performing a day-bound mitzvah, hold off until Netzachama. Hold off until the sun begins to rise, because it's hard to tell when Alos is, when the crack of dawn is. But as far as mitzvahs that need to be done during the night, we go lechumra, we go stringently in the other direction. Since Alos is really Ne'ikar, is in principle the morning, you have until Alos, you don't have until Netzachama. Very good. Good question, Paul. And good halach lemaisa. Speaking of halach lemaisa, speaking of practical halacha, this next mission we're going to do is going to be chock full of practical halacha. We're going to talk about laning, how many aliyos you do on what days. Can you make, it's a dirty word, it's called a hosafa. You guys ever hear that term? Yeah, some of you might remember one of my first shiurim here was on Tirchut Tzibura, not imposing on the congregation's time. So this actually, the sugya we're about to do is one of the classic sources for that discussion. So I'm really excited. Let's jump right in. Okay. So first, the Mishnah is going to talk a little bit about the regulations of reading Megillah, because after all, that's our Masechta. But then soon thereafter, it's going to talk about the general regulations of Kriyas HaTorah, of Torah reading, which of course is naturally more relevant to us because it comes up far more frequently. Hakoris Megillah Ome VeYoshev Kara Echa Karushnayim Yatsu. So two halachas right off the bat. One is allowed to read the Megillah even for the congregation, even at shul. If you're the Baal Kore, in theory, you could read it when you are sitting if you need to. Another halacha. I'll just finish this line. Another halacha is that one person can read the Megillah. If you so desire, two people can read the Megillah together at the same time. Now, why is that a chiddush? Well, as we'll see toward the end of this year, there's a principle called Trei Kali Lo Mishtamai. Then, in general, when there are two voices that are talking at the same time, we assume that you're not able to discern a particular voice. Does anyone know where this principle is actually used as a leniency in recent years?
To allow women to do it with a man.
Excellent, Toby. Or even two women singing, perhaps. This is the classic tshuva of the Sridei Eish, in which he was asked, a little bit pre-World War II, he was asked by youth groups in Germany, if they can have boys and girls singing together. And it's a lengthy tshuva. It's really worth just – the whole tshuva is full of so many important ideas. I don't want to reduce it down to one thing, but it's very important tshuva for this idea that he used the principle of trei kali lo mishtamai in order to maybe find a heter for the boys and girls singing together, because it won't be an issue of kolisha if you don't hear one particular individual's call.
So, Rabbi, do they both make the bracha?
I'm sorry?
Do they both make the bracha on the Mikra Megillah?
Oh, very interesting. Right, because you would think, oh, interesting. Phil is asking a good question. Would we go so far as to say that two individuals could actually make the bracha on the Megillah together? I don't think so, but you know what? I need to look that one up according to this. But I do highly doubt it, though. But the question is, what would be the distinction? So we'll talk about that closer to the end of the shiur, God willing. Okay. So I believe he's referring to Haravis Rivenu. We'll see it soon. That whether you make the special bracha at the end of Megillah reading. So it depends on where you live based on your minhag. Okay, so that's all for Megillah-oriented halachas. Let's move on to now talk about laning, about Kriyas HaTorah. Okay, when do we lane Torah during the weekdays? It's not a trick
Monday
question.
And Thursday.
Mondays and Thursdays.
Very good. B'shem v'chamishi b'shabbos. And then also b'mincha on Shabbos. Sorry, b'shabbos b'mincha. Korin shlosha. So we call up three aliyos. Ein pochsin mehen. Ve'ein mosifin alehen. Ve'maftir b'navi. So we do not deduct. It can't be less than three aliyos. But also important, you're not allowed to add on an aliyah either. So actually, there's a question. What happens? The minhag is when you have a chassan, you have a guy who just got married and he's in his shivas yimei hamishta. He's in sheva brachos week. So you generally give an aliyah to someone who just got married. He's a chassan. So the question is, what if you have two chassanim who are both Yisraelim? Often that can happen. You're big enough of a shul and chances are they're both Yisraelim. So
well, they can do it together.
That's not the solution that's given, but the question is, what do you do? So the suggestion that's given lahalacha is that you could actually ask the Kohen who's present if he would be so kind as to take a coffee break for a moment. And then once the Kohen, because there's no real imperative that the first aliyah needs to go to the Kohen. It's if a Kohen is present, then we follow the order of precedence. But if there's no Kohen in the room, then you just go straight to Yisraelim. So that's actually lahalacha, and it's recommended. And I can't remember what the situation was. I don't know if it was two chassanim, but we had, I think it was, you know what it was? We had two gentlemen. Oh, I remember this one. This is a while ago. At morning minyan, we had two gentlemen with a yard site for a parent on that day. Both were Yisraelim, and both really wanted their aliyah.
So you know what I did?
So I asked, what was it? Who was the Cohen there? Maybe it was Jeff. Is Jeff Kahn a Cohen? Erwin, you're good. Okay, we have Erwin here who can confirm everyone. He knows everyone by heart as well. So Jeff is a Cohen. So I asked Jeff if he'd be so kind as to leave. Jeff is a really nice guy. He said, of course. So you know what happens? We call up the first guy who's Yisrael. We're calling him up. For perfunctory reasons, we have to say, is there a Kohen present? And we were like, sure. We looked around the room. There was like no Kohen present. There was one guy who was a guest that day. And he's like, I'm a Kohen. And I was like, oh, no. And so we basically sent out Jeff for nothing. And then this guy comes up. And I'm like, oh, man, who do we give the aliyah to now? And, you know, it was rough. We tried. You know, you try to be accommodating, and it doesn't always
work. There's a solution. If you have at least 20 men, you can split up into two minyanim.
We'd easily get 20 men at morning minyan. That's not always the case. By you, that's the case in the five towns I know. We can use.
I think Phyllis's point is well taken, though. So why not take advantage of the Mishnah says that you can have two people do it together.
Oh, but not for Torah reading. We're going to see in the Gemara.
Oh.
Oh, you can, but not for Torah. Excellent question. So we're going to, you know what? Let's go forward. We're going to get to that in the Gemara. So,
and what if you have a bar mitzvah boy?
Who would take precedence? A bar mitzvah bo by yom versus a chasen, you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just whoever you want to give the honor to, honestly. I don't think there's real halachic precedence for that. But good question. Oh, but why do I bring this up? I bring this to say, you may have asked, and this is what I think. I don't know if Erwin, if you were the Gabbai. I don't think you were the Gabbai that meeting. I think it was 7:30 Shacharis. So whoever was the Gabbai asked me, can we just add on another Aliyah? And I said, no, you can't add another Aliyah. Now, usually I bother Erwin on Shabbos. Erwin wants to give a Hosafa to get everyone in because Erwin's a very nice guy and wants to honor everyone. I'm not as nice of a guy. I'm like, you know, it's seven Aliyahs. We'll fit in what we can fit in. So Shabbos, you're allowed to do Hosafos, as we'll see soon. But on a weekday, you're actually not allowed to add a Hosafa. It says, the Ein Mosifin Alehen. You're not allowed to add on additional Aliyos. Likewise, you don't do Haftorah B'Navi. So we'll elaborate more on that halacha. Now the question is, why don't we add on Aliyos? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Ein Mosifin Alehen. Ein Mosifin Alehen. Shlo Yiksha Litzibor. Shouldn't be a difficulty for the congregation. Meshehen Yemei Melacha. People got to get to work. It's like nothing's changed, you know? The folks at the 6:30 still got to catch their trains. Okay, back into the Mishnah. The way it used to work, instead of every man who gets an aliyah makes a bracha before and afterwards, the guy who gets the first aliyah makes the opening bracha, and then the guy who gets the final aliyah makes the conclusion bracha. So Asher Bachar Bano at the beginning, and then Asher Nasala Taras Emes at the end. And that was it. All the middle guys didn't actually recite any brachos. We'll talk about in the Gemara why it was instituted. Don't worry. Barashi Chadashim, we're going through everything. Okay, so our lowest tier are the weekday ones and Shabbos Mincha. Those are our lowest tier. Moving up from the lowest tier to the second to lowest tier, Barashi Chadash B'chol Shom Moe Korin Arba Ein Posin Mehen Ve Mosifin Alei Ve Martir Benavi Haboseh Bachosim Etorim Averich Lev Nel Acharat. All the same stuff, except for the number of Aliyos on Chol Moe and Rosh Chodesh. We have four Aliyos, and if you're going to catch on, there's a little bit of a theme here. The higher the level of sanctity of that day, the more Aliyos there are. There's actually a very deliberate correlation there. So the rule is that if there's musaf, but it's not a real yontif, you only have four aliyos. Rosh Chodesh, we have a carbon musaf. We say musaf on Rosh Chodesh. Likewise, Chol Moed, but remember, it's called Chol HaMoed, which by definition means it's not a full-fledged yontif. Hence, there are only four aliyos.
What about if it's Rosh Chodesh Shabbos Mincha?
Rosh Chodesh, Shabbos, Mincha, still three Aliyos.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, still three. Three Aliyos, three Aliyos. Because the logic in that would be that Rosh Chodesh would only affect the morning laning. Rosh Chodesh never mandates laning in the afternoon, so it wouldn't modify the Shabbos afternoon one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, why doesn't it matter? What about Shabbos morning, though? If it's Rosh Chodesh.
Yes, the Maftir becomes Rosh Chodesh, and it affects the Haftorah as well.
No, so but then
Shabbos has to be seven Aliyos.
Right, no matter what.
Okay. It's only going to add. It's not going to deduct.
But I'm saying so it doesn't bump up to eight.
No, it does not bump up to eight, but the Maftir becomes we take out a second Sefer Torah.
Yeah, yeah.
So it does add on in that respect. Okay. Right.
Yes. I want to suggest that it's beneficial for the Kohen to go out, and that is because it helps keep one's ego in check. It's very easy to let seemingly being important go to your head. Matter of fact, I've only been in my shul since June 14th. There are a couple of Gabbayim who don't know yet that I'm a Kohen. I haven't told them.
Well, that's it's nice to be able to sit in the back sometimes. See, that's why I leave Downing very often also, totally because of that.
Remember, the two Gabayim who know that I'm a Kohen, it's only because they saw a new face in the minion and they offered me Shlishi.
I guess you have to tell them. Yeah, you have to tell them at that point. Yeah, because otherwise it could be Motzi Laz will cast aspersions on your Kohen status, which we don't want.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. So, okay, we're moving up the ranks, guys. Be Yom Tov. We have Sukkot coming up. How many aliyahs on a typical day of Sukkot? Chamisha, five aliyahs. Be Yom HaKippurim, shisha. Yom Kippur is six. Be Shabbos, shiva. And Shabbos is seven. Why? Because Yom HaKippurim, what's the punishment for violating Yom Kippur? Kares, divine excision. Whereas for Shabbos, it's skila. You get stoning for that. So Shabbos, we can see by virtue of the punishment. So this is actually a very interesting discussion. It says in Pirkei Avos that, you know, we don't know how much reward we get from mitzvahs. I don't know if like, you know, the mitzvah of kibbutz of aim versus the mitzvah of wearing tzitzis. I don't know how many mitzvah points they equal up to. But interestingly, one Rambam talks about on that mission Pirkei Avos as well as others, that when it comes to the los ases, when it comes to the sins, there actually is a bit of a taxonomy. We could actually figure out what are considered the more severe sins. How? Well, look at what kind of punishment. What are the consequences for violating that? If the consequence of violating one thing is, you know, hereg, is chenek, is a lower form of capital punishment, and the other one is shavas, which you get skila for, which gets stoning, then clearly we see violation of Shabbos is very severe. Hence, Shabbos gets a whopping seven aliyos because of its great sanctity. Now, in post mehen, we cannot deduct as much as I and others might like to. One might want to deduct an aliyah. Sorry, that's not going to happen. However, Irwin, close your ears. Avamos sifin alehen, but in theory, one could add extra aliyos should they so desire.
It says ve'ein mosifin aleihem.
That means to add additional aliyos.
No, it says ve'ein mosifin. We don't add.
You might be at an earlier line where it says that.
Oh, am I looking at something?
You're probably a few lines up from us. That's all. We're on the second wide line. So we're just about Shabbos. Shabbos and Yom Tov, you can add on other ones. For Shabbos, you cannot. Excuse me. There's actually a discussion in the postgame. Is this referring to Yontif as well, or is it only Shabbos that you can do Hosafa? Because remember, Yontif was deliberately given five aliyos to indicate that while it's very sanctified, it's not as sanctified as Shabbos. So if you do a Hosafa on Yontif, all of a sudden you bump it up to Yom Kippur status, which would not be appropriate. So it may only be on Shabbos you're allowed to do Hosafa. Ironically, the day that has the most aliyos, you're allowed to add on an extra aliyah. Go figure. Sorry, just a second. I think there's someone in the building. I'll be right back. People come in here all weird hours of the night. I have no idea. Okay. All right. Where were we? Okay. Maftir Benavi, and we have Haftorah, as we well know. Same idea. What the first guy makes a bracha to open up, and the last guy makes a bracha to conclude. Into the Gemara. Here we go. Tana. Masha ain't came by Torah. What's this referring to? So remember, we learned that one can sit when leading Megillah for the Tzibor. Well, that ain't going to fly when it comes to reading the Torah. When it comes to reading the Torah for the Tzibor, you need to be standing. Mina hani mili, where do we get this from? On Rabbi Abahu, damar kra, bato po amodi madi. Now come and stand with me, God says to Moshe. You see that when one is reading Torah and teaching Torah to someone else, they're supposed to be standing when they are learning, when they're teaching. If not for this pasuk, I would not be able to refer to God and say that God stood as he taught, as it were. It's anthropomorphism, as we call it. What does it teach us? It's instructive for any teacher who's teaching the kid, who's teaching not just kids, teaching students, that it's not appropriate if he is sitting down on a couch on an elevated surface while everyone else is sitting on the ground. There should be, they should be on equal playing field. Now this, I don't know if this is what the Gemara is referring to, but it kind of reminds me, I had a teacher in middle school and he was very mocked on us not eating food during class. Okay, you're allowed to have rules in your classroom, but then he would actually bring food and eat it during class. And he would basically say, well, I'm the teacher, so I can do it and you guys can't. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, exactly. That left a pretty bad taste in my mouth. So essentially, you know, you should be on a level playing field. Also, what's important is that while the students, you know, they have to have respect for the teacher, at the same time, they have to feel comfortable engaging with the teacher and challenging any assertions that he makes. That's called the Milchamta Shel Torah. That's called the War of Torah. So you'll find this many times. I think offices, like corporate offices, are sometimes designed that way. That like the guy whose office it is in like this big imposing chair. And then if you come in for like a meeting or interview, you're putting like the small one and you're actually like lower down. Psychologically, you feel inferior to the person. So the Torah is telling us not to do that. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Mimos Moshe Rabad Rabban Gamliel. We're going to focus a little more on this idea of standing when learning. So from the days of Moshe until the great sage Rabban Gamliel, Lohayu Lamdin Torah El Mu'umad, they used to stand when they learned. You know, it's like, you know, maybe some of you say this. You know, I'll hear sometimes someone say, well, you know, back in Europe, we did X, Y, and Z. And, you know, you millennials today, you know, you're all a bunch of wimps. So basically, back in the day when they learned Torah, from days of Moshe until the days of Rangamliel, they used to stand whenever they learned Torah. Mishamesh Rangamliel, when Rangamliel passed away, Yard Choleg Olam, whatever this means, some kind of sickness came to the world. The Hayu Lamdin Torah Miyushav, and everyone only studied Torah while sitting down. Behind it's a town, and that's what it means when it teaches in the Mishnah at the end of Sota. Mishamesran Gamliel Batal Kavod Torah. When Gamliel passed away, that's when honor for Torah ceased to exist. Meaning people, I remember. I'm not going to mention the organization by name because, you know, why do that? But I saw an advertisement one time for an organization a few years ago in which they basically brand themselves as an advanced Talmud study program. And what was like one of the pictures showed the participants in a pool, is like for a summer program, with laminated pages of Gemara purportedly studying together. And I'm like, okay, you guys can go to the pool and arguably, maybe, okay, take a page of Gemara with you. You could say, like, oh, they're so holy. Even when they're swimming, they're learning Gemara. Okay. But you can't do that and also call it advanced Talmud study. You know, like, can you imagine, like, any kind of, like, you know, medical students or law students or what have you? And that's how they advertise, like, I don't know, the Yale law program was like showing them in a pool with their laminated pages. That's, you know, you got to choose one or the other. So okay. Here's the issue, though. We have a bit of a contradiction. In one pasuk, it says that Moshe sat when he ascended the mountain, when he went up to receive the Torah. The other pasuk says that he stood on the mountain. Well, first of all, what did he actually do? And if he was sitting, didn't we just learn that it's inappropriate to sit when one is learning? It's just to stand up out of honor and respect. So there are four resolutions given. Amar Rav, Omed v'lomed, Yoshi v'shona. When he was learning it initially, he was standing, when he was learning from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And then later, you know, during Night Seder, when he was doing Chazara, and he was reviewing what he learned, that he did when he was sitting. Okay, Next answer.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Question. Does this have anything to do with why some men stand up during the whole Kriyat HaTorah?
I think it does relate to that. Yes, Phyllis. I think there is such a minhag out of honor for Torah, and I think it very much relates to this discussion. Excellent point. Yeah, I believe
some women do also, right?
Yeah, I don't think Phyllis meant like only men, right?
Those are the ones that I see most of all. My direction.
We had a good show. Welcome our women to stand for a Torah reading, also, if you so desire.
But with the way I'm
facing, put me on record for that.
The way I'm facing, I see the men and the Torah itself. So that's why.
Yeah, I understand. Women are welcome to stand for Torah reading as well, should they so desire. Okay.
Well, the men stand when the Torah is being taken and been put back.
No, during reading of the Torah.
I know, but in addition to that, all the men stand when it's being taken out and when it's being put back.
Oh, well, sure.
I asked the women.
Right. So are the women.
I know what they do in the five towns.
Well, I don't watch the women, so I don't know.
There you go.
Very good, very good. All right. Rechanina Amar. Lo ome velo yoshi velo shocha. So actually, it's somewhere in between. He wasn't sitting, he wasn't standing, but he was kind of bending over, bowing in submission. Think about when we're saying, you know, vido yashamnu baganu. So bowing down a little bit in submission. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Ein Yeshiva El Lashon Akava, Shnema Ratesh Bakosh Yalim Rabbin. So yeshiva here doesn't mean to be sitting down literally, but it means a place where you spend time, which actually makes a lot of sense with what we call a modern day yeshiva. It's not literally about sitting down, but it's about spending significant time absorbing the text and studying the Torah and dedicating yourself to it. Finally, Rava Amar, Rakos Mumen Okashus Meyushav. The easier things he did while standing, and when there's like a really hard svara you have to think through, he sat down, and that's like where he, you know, went back and forth and shuckled back and forth until he finally understood it. So it was permissible for him to sit down if that's what he needed to understand the lesson. And that brings us to the end of that. Let's briefly get on to the next page to address Phyllis and Toby's point, and then we'll call it a day. Karaka Karushnaim Yatsu. So remember, we learned that two people can read Megillah at the same time, and that's okay. So let's learn a brisa about that. Tana, Masha ain't came by Torah. So it's not the case when it comes to the Torah. Only one person can read. Tana Rabbanan, it's laid out explicitly for us. But Torah, Echa Kori Vecha Matargim, Uvashli Echa Kori Shnaim Matargim. So even the guy who's the Maturkim, the guy who's going to be translating the Torah, we don't actually do that nowadays because people, we have art scrolls, Chumashim. You can look at the translation to your heart's content. And we don't even make things longer than necessary, as we learned. But if you even have a translator, there should only be one translator. Upanavi, when it comes to reading the Haftorah, Echa Kori Yushanayim Atargman, Uvashli Yushanayim Kori Yushanayim Atargman. There, we're a little bit more lenient on allowing two argument, two translators, but only one person can read. And then finally, Uba Hallel, Uba Megillah, when it comes to Hallel, and it comes to Lady Megillah, which, you know, what does Hallel and Megillah have to do with each other? Remember, we had a question in the Gemara. Why don't we say Hallel on Purim? And one of the answers was, Kriyasa Zu Hilula. So the reading of the Megillah actually is the Hallel. So a few Asara Korim, Asara Matargim, in theory, you can even have 10 people reading and 10 people translating. My Taima, Kevin the Chaviva, Yahavi the Taima Vashame. Very interesting concept that since people just love Hallel, you know, you'll see like on some, I was talking with another rabbi recently, he said in his shul on Hoshana Rabbah, they bring in the instruments, they have a lot of fun with it. Interesting discussion about whether to do it. But people, you know, some people really love Hallel. You see on Yom HaAtzmaut, in certain places, people bring in instruments and they'll have a whole fun time with Hallel. People like Hallel. Some people like Hallel. And then when it comes to Megillah also, apparently people really enjoy listening to the story of the Megillah. It's a very captivating story. It's a very, you know, it's a very easy story for anyone to appreciate and enjoy. So even if you have a lot of people leaning at the same time, since you're going to be listening so intently, it's okay, even if you have multiple people reading it. But God willing, we'll pick it up on this idea next time. So we are now about eight lines or so into Chaf Aleph Meves, the 21b. And again, Mazel Tov, everyone on finishing the second parak. Welcome to those who are just joining us at the beginning of the third parak. And God willing, looking forward to a sweet new year. We'll continue to learn Torah together and hopefully with a bright future and a Siyum down the line in sight.
Thank you for teaching us so well.
Thank you.
Thank you. And for all your...
And good Shabbos and a Shana Tova to Katz.
Yes, for everyone.
Thank you, to all of you and your loved ones. Have a happy, sweet new year.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you so much.